Our first case for argument this morning is Williams v. Hanks. Mr. Osberg.
May it please the Court, I'm Michael Osberg and I represent Ronald Williams. In my time today, I'd like to make 3 points to this Court. The first is that this is a failure to investigate case involving ineffective assistance of counsel, and this case is materially indistinguishable from this Court's decision in Bartley v. Stanley, in which Chief Judge Easterbrook participated.
It doesn't matter who participates in particular decisions. They all speak for the Court.
It is, in addition, indistinguishable from this Court's decision in Rakosa v. Hulick, and it is also indistinguishable from this Court's decision in Adams v. Bertrand.
You say it's indistinguishable, but as we stressed in Bartley, and as the Supreme Court has stressed in many of these cases, the question for ineffective assistance is not whether counsel omitted one thing or another and made an error, but in the end, the totality of counsel's performance. Your brief says counsel made the following error, but it doesn't tell us anything about counsel's performance. In Bartley, we said the real problem was that counsel did nothing for his client. He was basically a bump on a log. What did counsel do for his client in this case?
He deposed Adair Smith, and he cross-examined Adair Smith, and not much more. In particular, he should have investigated after he deposed Adair Smith. Adair Smith said Howard DeFord saw it all. That would have given Mr. Inman reason to believe that he should interview Howard DeFord. And this is especially true in light of his expressed and executed trial strategy to try to discredit Adair Smith, because Howard DeFord was on the state's witness list. Indeed, he was on the charging information as a witness. And it was not until the day of trial that Mark Inman knew that Howard DeFord would not show up as a witness. Without having spoken to Howard DeFord first, he didn't know that Howard DeFord might not show up and say exactly the same thing as Adair Smith, which would have been devastating to his strategy of discrediting Adair Smith. So the failure to interview Howard DeFord made no sense, even with respect to Mr. Inman's executed trial strategy, which was a fine strategy, discrediting Adair Smith. But there were only two witnesses in this case. One of them was called Adair Smith. The other was not, Howard DeFord. And that's why this case is, in fact, a worse instance of ineffective assistance than any of the three cases I mentioned earlier, because in each of those three cases, there were multiple incriminating witnesses. There was a single incriminating witness in this case. That witness was Adair Smith, and the state has conceded on two occasions that Adair Smith had no credibility. They conceded it first when, after her testimony, they offered Ron Williams a plea to see felony battery and all the other defendants a misdemeanor convictions. And they conceded it again in the state post-conviction proceedings when counsel for the state said, I think we can agree that Adair Smith is not credible.
In the cross-examination of Adair Smith, what did the counsel cover?
What she was doing by going over there. She was going over to...
By drugs. But by, I mean, drugs. As far as the nighttime, the thing that confused me is that, aside from the fact that the other guy couldn't see, or at least he had vision problems, it was 11 o'clock at night, wasn't it?
It was 11 o'clock at night, Your Honor, but I want to dispel any notion that the vision...
Well, let's assume he could see with correct vision, but it was 11 o'clock at night, and... There was some mention, maybe in his deposition or something, about headlights.
Adair Smith, at her deposition and in her trial testimony, said that she saw what she saw 8 to 10 feet in front of the car and the headlights. And there is no reason to believe from this record that, that Howard DeFord, sitting next to her, would not have seen the same thing if it were true.
And his deposition placed the people where?
Howard DeFord in his deposition said when they turned the corner, Matthew McGarvey was already down. He thought that Matthew McGarvey was passed out and drunk. He did not. Adair Smith, if Howard DeFord's testimony is credited, Adair Smith did not see anybody hit Matthew McGarvey over the head with a pipe.
He said something about they were all standing on the other side of the street or something?
There was a group of people standing off to the other side of the street, yes, Your Honor.
And this guy was lying by himself?
Yes, Your Honor. I also want to dispel today or mention the misstatement of fact in the state's brief that Howard DeFord's police statement was sworn. It was not sworn, and his statement was not a recantation in any sense. Howard DeFord said that the police had left out of his statement that he had said Adair Smith could not have seen what she said she saw. And as Bartley says, a lawyer cannot know whether a police statement is accurate unless the lawyer talks to the witness. I see I'm into my rebuttal time. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Asperger. Miklos.
Yes. May it please the court. Petitioner's counsel provided effective assistance as guaranteed by the Sixth Amendment when he chose not to personally interview a potential witness who admitted both at the time of the police investigation and on post-conviction that he had no personal knowledge of the murder. The state courts reasonably applied a Strickland analysis in determining that petitioner's counsel was not deficient in his performance. Petitioner's counsel made a reasonable professional judgment that supported limiting counsel's investigation when he chose not to interview DeFord after his investigation. Counsel conducted discovery. He reviewed statements given to the police, including DeFord's. He deposed Smith, the one eyewitness that came forward to report the crime. DeFord told the police in a taped statement that he knew nothing regarding a crime near the intersection of LaSalle and 21st Street. At the time of his statement, he believed Smith saw the crime. He said, "I assume that she saw it when," and that is reasonably that he believed that she saw it.
And that statement was an unsworn statement?
The record does not show whether it is sworn or unsworn. The exhibit that was admitted is just, there's a blank form in front of his statement that just says voluntary statement. It was never signed, but we don't know if that's the original or not. So the record does not show whether it was sworn or unsworn. But there was no disagreement below that these were his words, that he made this statement. At the end of the statement, he said that there was nothing that he wanted to add and that he believed they covered everything. In addition, in his statement made on post-conviction, he said that he did read it after they wrote it. I think it's reasonable to assume that that meant after the police wrote down his statement that he read it. DeFord's statement corroborated many aspects of Smith's statement and did not negate Smith's recitation of the events. Moreover, Smith said that DeFord was legally blind, so there were issues regarding his ability to perceive the events.
But, of course, counsel never really pursued that. He was also a truck driver. Wasn't DeFord a tow truck driver?
Yes, according to DeFord, yes.
So it would raise a question, you know, if someone was legally blind, how could they be a truck driver? I mean, it certainly one could explore whether or not that was a truthful statement that she made or get some information from DeFord. Because I assume there's a minimal standard that you have to meet in Indiana in order to be able to drive a commercial vehicle.
I would assume so, yes.
And actually, when you check the internet, it says that you must have 20/40 vision without glasses or corrective lenses. You have to have that. So that would be a little inconsistent with what she said.
That could be, yes. But again, that wasn't the only reason that supported counsel's decision not to further investigate DeFord. Moreover, if DeFord was called as a witness, he could also have been used to rebut the defense's attempt to show that Smith had a recent fabrication of her testimony, because DeFord said that Smith told him within a half an hour afterwards that she in fact saw the crime occurred and who had hit the victim. And so that could have been admitted against the defendant to rebut a presumption of recent fabrication. And it's reasonable for counsel to rely on the police statement because DeFord said that he saw nothing regarding the crime. There was no other details that DeFord gave that needed to be further fleshed out, as in the cases that my opposing counsel has provided. It's reasonable to assume that DeFord would not have come forward to tell the truth and recant his previous statement, and it would have been a recantation, because in his first statement he said, "I assume that she saw it when." So for him to come back and then say, "No, she could not have seen it," that is a recantation of his prior statement. The state courts reasonably applied Strickland in determining that petitioner suffered no prejudice as a result of counsel's decision not to interview DeFord. Smith was thoroughly cross-examined regarding her credibility and her ability to perceive the events of the murder and identify the perpetrators.
Both of them were sitting next to each other in the car, weren't they?
Yes.
So it would seem likely that he would have seen something.
DeFord was driving, and he stated that he was waiting at the intersection looking to cross onto, I believe, LaSalle Street from 21st. He said there were several cars, there was heavy traffic, so he in essence, could have been looking at other things, frankly. And after he turned the corner is when he said he saw the body laying on the ground. And the record shows, his statement is that he saw a group of people in the street and that they were walking from the west to the east side. That would have been away from the person lying on the ground, and that they were laughing. A group of people were in the vicinity of the body when he saw it.
Well, after he turned the corner, then the headlights come into play. Obviously, when he's going another direction, the headlights aren't a factor. Was there other lighting? Does the record show that she could have looked and seen something without the headlights?
Yes. There were headlights from other cars, and apparently there was a light in the area, but I don't think the record really shows how much light or whether if it was even working. But there were other headlights in the area. And the testimony regarding where the headlights of DeFord's car were in relation to when DeFord saw the body, that is unclear. He never says, "I saw it illuminated in my headlights." I believe counsel asked him whether he had his headlights on, and he said yes. But there was never a connection there or a follow-up that indeed he saw the body laying on the side of the road when his headlights fell upon the body. And Smith testified at trial that even after they turned, the headlights, kind of a side illumination, showed the edge of the road. But that's as much detail as I can remember from the record.
Which way were they turning?
They were turning south.
Which is to the right or left?
Left.
So they're crossing. There's oncoming traffic, and they're facing oncoming. It's a two-way street, I presume, and they're then turned to another street?
I believe that 21st Street is a tease into LaSalle. That's my memory of that right now. I don't believe there were cars coming towards him. I think he described cars driving on LaSalle.
So this is a T, a dead end, or whatever you want to call it.
I'm not positive about that, but that's...
Well, you know, it just seems that there's so many gaps here. You imply that there's a risk to have even interviewed the guy. Is that right? That he didn't even interview... What is his name? Defford? Did not interview. He just went by whatever the police report said.
Right. He went by the police report and the statement that DeFord gave, his own statement.
Yeah. Was there a risk in interviewing him? Just to find out, first of all, 11 o'clock at night, he's driving. I assume he can see. To even interview him and ask further questions just to find out, because obviously, as the court pointed out, her testimony, uncontested, is devastating.
No, I don't believe there's any obstacle to him interviewing DeFord, and it would not have been unreasonable
to... trial strategy or anything else, was there some reason not to interview him?
No, there's...
Other than just, well, he said he didn't know anything, so I'm not going to ask him, but he was driving... They were both in the same position. Yeah, maybe traffic and other things distracted him, and she saw something going on and then mentions it a half an hour later, apparently, instead of saying, hey, some guy just got clubbed.
In fact, I think she said, drive on, at that time, and then later told him what she saw. And there's no obstacle for him, and it would not have been unreasonable for him to interview DeFord. But that's not the standard when we talk about deficient performance. We look at the investigation and whether or not the steps that they take, if there's reason to pursue it further. And at this point, he's telling the police, I don't know anything. I know nothing about the crime.
Well, I can see why she says drive on. This isn't a very good time to buy drugs. But I don't understand the context. Yeah, let's get out of here. That's what she's saying.
I see my time is up.
Thank you very much. Anything further, Mr. Osberg?
In the supplemental appendix at page 5 is part of Howard DeFord's statement. Here is what he said. And when you turned the corner, question, how many feet past 21st Street did you see something? Probably about 6 feet. I saw a group of guys in the street. Were they walking from a certain direction? Yes, sir. They were walking from the west side of the street to the east side laughing. And as you drove further on the street on LaSalle, what did you see? I saw a guy laying on the side of the street behind a portable basketball goal. What was he doing? He was just laying there. Was he in the street? No, he was in between the street and the sidewalk. Did you drive on then? Yes, sir, I did. I want to dispel, perhaps, I hope finally, this reliance on the statement by Howard DeFord in his police statement that I assumed she saw what she saw when we were turning the corner. He assumed that because he had told the police she could not have seen it 8 to 10 feet in front of the headlights. Therefore, he assumed she must have seen it when they were turning. But we know from her she didn't see it when they were turning. She saw it 8 to 10 feet in front of her in the headlights. And so when the respondent argues that it was reasonable not to interview Howard DeFord because Howard DeFord knew nothing about the crime, if Howard DeFord knew nothing about the crime, Adair Smith knew nothing about the crime because they were sitting side by side in a car, and Adair Smith said this happened 8 to 10 feet in front of her in the headlights. I think Stanley also stands for the proposition to meet another point that the respondent made. Perhaps not that it's never reasonable to rely on a police statement, but Stanley does say you cannot know whether a witness's statement is accurate until you talk to the witness. And to briefly go to Chief Judge Easterbrook's point about what other things Mark Inman did, I just bring up Montgomery versus Peterson, in which the lawyer called, I think it's 11 alibi witnesses, but he didn't call the one witness that was unbiased. And this court found that that was an instance of ineffective assistance of counsel. I see my time is almost up, and I ask this court to reverse the decision of the district court and grant a writ of habeas corpus.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.